This podcast is a production of Unfiltered Studios. If you would like to know more about joining Unfiltered Studios, please visit our website at unfpod.com for more information.
And now, here's a word from our sponsor.
Spartacus Coffee is made for and made by hustlers, entrepreneurs, peak athletes, self-starters, and free thinkers. Our community of coffee drinkers believe in lifting each other up to be the best version of ourselves we can be. On top of that, every sale goes to the nonprofit organization No Kid Hungry, a national effort to end childhood hunger in America. To learn more about that and order some of the best, richest coffee you can find at an affordable price, go to SpartacusCoffee.com and be sure to use my promo code. It's pretty simple. It's Jay Burke, which is J-A-Y-B-U-R-K-E, and get 10% off your first order. Remember, Spartacus Coffee. We fuel the grind. We fuel the success. We fuel champions. We are Spartacus.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
Here's a question to wake you all up. Is monogamy just a restrictive system that limits our natural desire for different sexual experiences and deep connections with more than one person? Or is it essential for maintaining social stability and emotional safety? In reality, the truth probably lies somewhere in between these two views. Serial monogamy, this concept of hitching your wagon to one partner at a time, is the sacred cow of pop culture. It's plastered all over movies, TV shows, and novels, shaping our collective psyche to the point where grandma is on your case, badgering you with the age-old question, have you settled down yet? Society has got us all drinking the Kool-Aid, convinced that true love means eyes for no one else. A major problem with this ingrained belief is that it often ignores other possibilities. We don't fully understand these alternatives or whether they might be suitable for us. This creates a divide that doesn't really need to exist. To dive deeper into these ideas, I've brought in Dr. Jess, a therapist and coach who specializes in non-monogamous relationships, to help us get a better grasp of the subject. And listen, we're not here to push the idea of a non-monogamous lifestyle on you. Instead, we're looking to expand our view of love and relationships, stepping outside the conventional norms to highlight the importance of individual choice. Dr. Jess points out that non-monogamy isn't the right path for everyone, but stresses the importance of respecting and recognizing different ways people choose to love and connect. Considering we're all just making our way on this small planet adrift in the immense void of space, shouldn't we be able to find happiness in whatever suits us best? But find out for yourself in an episode I'm calling Love Multiplied. Insights, misconceptions, and the world of non-monogamy. It won't always be a straight line.
It won't always be a straight line.
It won't always be a straight line.
But take the journey.
Take the journey.
Take the journey.
Escape a while for thoughtful excursions
into the world of ideas across media,
politics, technology,
pop culture,
and all realms of civic life. Take the journey.
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 You're listening to The With Jay Burke Show. Hello and welcome to The With Jay Burke Show. My name is Jason Burke, and though I'm technically the host of this podcast, it's the guests who truly take top billing. This is a place for curious minds who enjoy civil and sometimes meandering conversation. If you appreciate a few laughs and want to come away with new knowledge about subjects that aren't always easy to break down, then you're the person I want listening to this podcast. In today's episode, we explore the realm of non-monogamy. Our guest, Dr. Jess, a therapist and coach specializing in non-monogamous relationships, provides a unique perspective on this frequently misinterpreted lifestyle. She shares her experiences and knowledge, offering a deep dive into the realities of ethical non-monogamy, dispelling common misconceptions, and uncovering the reasons people choose this way of life. This open and informative discussion aims to broaden our awareness of different relationship dynamics.
Jessica, thank you so much for being on the show today and dealing with my technical difficulties, but you know, we find a way. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and then we'll talk about why we're here.
Sounds good. So I am a therapist by background, and I'm a clinical social worker. And I semi-recently, a little over a year ago, also started a business as a non-monogamous relationship coach. So that really was born out of marrying my clinical skills with opening my own relationship and having expertise in that area that I think there's not a lot of stuff out there for folks on support-wise. So that's a very basic, like, where we started.
When did you start getting into what we call non-monogamy? Like, how did you start studying that or getting into that field?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny, actually, because I think some folks, like, if they're around a certain type of, like, groups of people or live in a certain area, whatever, they might have heard of non-monogamy before. When my husband and I opened our relationship ourselves, we did not know a single other non-monogamous person. So it's not like I, you know, like, knew these people and were like, oh, hey, that's cool. It really was, honestly, in the middle of COVID, and we had nothing to do but stare at our phones. And I just started seeing all this, like, content on mostly on Snapchat channels, which is very random, but just like content around different types of non-monogamy. And I, you know, being like a sociology background, all that, I just thought, oh, this is like so interesting intellectually, right? And it is, but you know, quickly that became less of an intellectual interest, more of like, oh shoot, I think maybe there might be some of me in here. And like, now what the heck do I do about that? Yeah. So it started in, you know, in mid-pandemic and just kind of reading and seeing stuff online. And then, you know, once time went by and we opened our relationship and dealt with a whole bunch of stuff, I started, you know, doing my research and reading books and listening to podcasts and all that stuff, and started kind of getting some more, like, more formal, I guess you could say, education around it. And then that's when I decided to open my second business, because in looking at those resources, you know, I realized that while there is a lot more out there than there ever was before, there's not a ton of kind of like direct support systems out there. So that was my goal.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've seen more in the last few years. I don't know if COVID maybe helped kickstart that, where people were looking at their own life in totality at that point, and, you know, maybe questioning some things. And just, I think, I mean, obviously at that time, I think a lot of people question life in general, even the purpose of work, right? I mean, that changed so much. But, you know, in learning more about this and seeing more and obviously looking into it to talk to you, I noticed that it's kind of a big umbrella term that we use, right? Non-monogamy. So there's so many different types of layers to that. Like, you know, obviously there's polygamy, everybody's heard of, which is, I believe, has to do with marriage with multiple partners.
Yep.
And then there's polyamory, which isn't marriage, but it's more than one partner, or love, or however you want to put it. And there was just a whole bunch of others. So I think maybe it would help if we, for the audience anyway, to kind of just, you know, give some insight into what each of these terms are and what they're for.
Yeah, so you're exactly right and well researched. So non-monogamy, you'll often see it written as ENM, ethical non-monogamy, sometimes CNM, consensual non-monogamy. I personally just call it non-monogamy for a variety of reasons, but, you know, essentially using those terms, people are trying to, you know, put up front there that, like, what they're doing is not cheating, right? Hence those terms. So non-monogamy overall is like the umbrella term, like you said. And then underneath that, you have like a bunch of what we could call like styles or subtypes. And then usually under those subtypes, there's even more subtypes. So it's not surprising that people get overwhelmed, because there's like 1 million different ways this can look. So I think the first thing, well, you mentioned, is polygamy. So most people are familiar with polygamy in the context of like the TLC show Sister Wives. And I think most people associate polygamy with, at this point, at least in the US, with Mormonism, which is funny because the Mormon Church is not pro-polygamy. It's a very like small subsect of people who have just decided they're going to do this anyway.
I think about Big Love, so.
Yes, that also that, yeah. Back.
Maybe yeah, that's there's the, there, a little bit.
Yeah, there have been a couple of those kind of shows. There actually was also a show called Brother Husband, which was only short-lived. But anyway, so yeah, polygamy is a little bit of a tricky thing in my community, not because of the marriage part. I definitely wouldn't say that folks like, and we'll talk about polyamory, but like polyamorous folks who have more than one romantic relationship. I wouldn't say that most polyamorous folks are opposed to the idea of marrying more than one person. It's not legal and you can't do that, but people will sometimes have like commitment ceremonies and such to mimic that. So it's not that it's the marriage part that people are anti. It's that typically polygamy comes from like highly patriarchal structures in which this only works one way, which is where a man has multiple wives. You don't see this woman having multiple husbands. It does happen, but the more traditional sense of polygamy is that way. And also those women are not allowed to have multiple partners as well. You know, people don't know what they don't know, but a lot of times people, when I tell them like what I do and all of that, they're like, oh, polygamy. And I'm like, no, we need to just reel it back because I can educate people on that, but you'll get some really bad remarks from people when you don't know what you don't know. So polygamy is a structure. It does exist. It's also part of a lot of like different cultural and religious backgrounds. And in the sense that we have seen it in the United States on shows like this, for example, it's usually not great. It's usually not ethical or very fair to the people involved. So that is kind of my piece on polygamy, if you will. So of the, you know, different kind of subtypes or styles of non-monogamy, we kind of have this, it is and it isn't a divide, because the whole point is to not put people in boxes and not divide up people into groups that can then, you know, we're better than you and all that jazz. But there's kind of this subgroup that's more around romantic, emotional-based connections. And then there's kind of a side where non-monogamous folks who are looking more for either purely sexual connections, physical connections, or, you know, just more heavily on that side, more of like a friends with benefits kind of thing. So folks who are interested in or have multiple romantic partnerships, we would call polyamorous. Then folks who are looking more for like the physical or sexual connection part, that might be swinging, which is also a term that most people know. I think that's like, we think of it as like this 70s or 80s housewife thing where like people are
shag carpets and exactly. Key parties and
yeah, house parties and put your keys in a bowl thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which people do not do. At least I've never seen people do that, but yeah, there's this like kind of, oh yeah, like that's when, you know, you put your keys in the bowl or whatever. So swinging typically, and I think what's important with all these terms is like there's sort of like a classic definition, but that doesn't mean that that's the way everyone practices. So swinging typically is two heterosexual couples swapping partners in the same room is typically like the classic definition, but there's a million ways. I mean, not all swingers are in relationships. Not all swingers are straight, obviously. Not all swingers only swap in the same room, etc. So that's kind of like one piece. And then we often put other kinds of physical or sexual openness into a category of like open relationships. So that could be like a couple decides to open their relationship to be able to have sex with other people, but they're not doing it together. It's maybe not like a house party or club or hotel kind of thing. It's more like finding a friends with benefits, hanging out, hooking up, et cetera. And often those are often separate, meaning not always a couple together swapping, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, like I said, there's like 1.2 million different ways that things can look. So I think it's like also really important to, you know, always like just do your due diligence in asking people, like if they're sharing these things with you, like what does that actually mean to you, to like not make assumptions.
Yeah, well, I think that's a big one. So, you know, what I found was that there is a lot of myths and misconceptions about these types of relationships, mostly because of how we've been, I guess, programmed is the word. I mean, we, you know,
everything's
a fairy tale as far as we're taught as a kid, which, you know, creates a huge stigma and stuff. So, you know, some of the things I found super interesting while looking through this was that obviously we're talking about there's more commonality now. So approximately about 1 in 5 individuals engage in what they defined as consensual non-monogamous relationships. So it's more prevalent than realized, despite any stigmas. The demographics were of various ages, races, religions, and education levels, meaning that there's, you know, there's a high instance of individuals who just are more open, and it doesn't matter what your background is or where you came from. A lot of people will think things like, well, that relationship must be on its last legs, or they're trying a last ditch effort. But there was a lot of interesting findings with that as far as people in these types of relationships. And I mean, definitely something I could talk about for a while, because it was amazing to find out and made a lot of sense once I read through a lot of the data. And I mean, a lot of it just had to do with not fixing relationships, but almost like fostering a community or exploring your own sexuality and just serving to like broader growth in general. I mean, what would your input on some of these myths be as far as dispelling them?
Yeah, I think I'm glad you cite that statistic too, because I think, of course, we think of this as like some, I mean, it is fringy, but like ultra fringy, like there's only one in every whatever. But it's funny, usually oftentimes when you see that statistic written like that, it is the like either 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 people surveyed at some point in their lives, present or past, have engaged in non-monogamy, which is approximately the same statistic as the number of Americans who own a cat. Which is a lot of people, right? Like, how many people do you know have a cat? So, you know, if you think of like you and 4 of your friends, that's 5 people, right? So I always think it's interesting when people learn that for the first time, because they're like, wait, what? Who? How are there that many people? And, you know, the reality is not everyone's going on podcasts and talking about it, right? Because of the stigma, So, you know, it's just that you're not seeing it. That doesn't mean it's not there. So, yeah, I think there's so many stigmas. Definitely what you mentioned is like a major one, right? That like, oh, if someone's going to, especially when it comes to like a monogamous couple who's been monogamous for X amount of time, or at least so you think, decides to open a relationship, right? Then people assume like something must be wrong, right? Like you have tried everything else and this is like the only other thing you can think to do. And that's just not true. I mean, in the work that I do, I will tell someone very, very matter-of-factly upfront, do not think this will fix your relationship. It will make everything harder. This is not going to make anything easier. It's somewhat akin to like the idea of like having a baby if your relationship's in trouble, right? Like, oh, we'll do this thing that'll bond us. And like everyone who has children knows that ain't gonna work, right? It's just gonna make everything more difficult, and it's going to like put light on cracks in your relationship that were already there that you're going to have to deal with when things get hard, right? So obviously not the same thing, but like this idea of like, oh, well, we're just going to open our relationship to save it. You're walking faster toward like up the course.
I would say when you get to a level where it's almost over, there's a certain kind of resentment underneath that lies there. I don't think opening up to other people will help the resentment that's already been fostered. That's something you have to take care of on your own or apart. So
yeah, will not make you feel like if you already are at a point where the relationship is unhealthy or just not a good fit anymore, whatever, like it's not going to make you feel warm and fuzzy, like I'm so glad to have this person in my life kind of feelings, because in order to get there, you have to work through a lot of other stuff, which like you said, if there's already this resentment piece, like that's not gonna work. So that's one of the big myths, I think, is this, people do this when they're already out the door, 1 foot out the door. I also think kind of adjacent to that is this myth that people, I see this all the time, it makes me so mad. People will say, especially on the internet, well, I know X number of people who are non-monogamous and none of their relationships worked, so this can't work. And then, of course, there's people like me who are like, hi, I'm literally putting out content to tell you how my life is working, right? But I think there is this idea of like, you know, people want studies around how many people open their relationship and then break up or get divorced, right? Well, how many people don't open the relationship and get divorced or break up, right? Like, it's not as if monogamy is foolproof. It's just that we've been taught that, right? Like, we've been taught that if you follow the right path, you kiss the frogs, you find the prince, princess, whatever, then you're all good. You're golden, right? But anyone who's been in a long-term committed relationship knows that that is not true. And you have to work through a lot of stuff. And sometimes it doesn't work out. And especially in non-monogamy, for the most part, I would say people get away from this idea that if a relationship ends, that means it's a failure. So to us, a relationship ending isn't even necessarily like a poignant thing. It just might mean that we're not compatible anymore. We want different things or whatever. So there's always that, like, this never works thing. And then, of course, you always got your classic, it's all about sex thing.
Right.
Which I just think is so funny. I think when I tell people that I'm polyamorous and I have two cis male partners, I think that they think it's like orgies at my house every weekend or something. And number one, my whole thing of that is like, if that's what you want to do and everyone's consenting and cool, then who cares? Like, we don't need to like slut shame either. Like, let's not do that. But also, that's just not how it is for everyone. And so, yeah, there's this like, I think there's this misconception, and I've had people basically make snide comments to me around this, that if you're non-monogamous, you're like some sort of like sexual predator, almost like you just want to sleep with everyone all the time, whatever. And, you know, I think we try to make jokes of it as much as we can in terms of like, yeah, I'm non-monogamous, but I don't want to be non-monogamous with your husband. Like, just because this is how I live my life does not mean that I'm like, it's not Pokemon. Like, I'm not trying to like catch them all. So yeah, I think people assume that like, it's all about sex, and, or you're just like trying to collect people or like turn people to the other side. Like, we have cookies, which we do, but like, no, that's just not how it is. So it's funny to me.
I would liken that growing up. So I've always had this kind of conversation too. It's like, same thing would happen for homosexuals, or you want to say LGBTQ. A lot of issues, especially males, like that I grew up with, they would always say something stupid to me like, well, I don't care if anybody's gay as long as they don't, you know, try to hit on me. And I'm like, you know, you could have taste if you're still gay. Like,
not everyone wants to sleep with you.
It used to make me laugh. Like, they forgot like that, you know, that's still a part of being.
Right. Like, straight people don't want to sleep with everyone who's the opposite sex of them. So why do you assume that gay people want to sleep with everyone who's the same sex? Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same in
it's this, very similar this
situation.
Yeah.
It's like, everybody just seems to try to say, thinks it's, yeah, like you said, it's like, you know, the old Roman orgies or something like that, where everybody's just putting hands out and trying to.
Yeah. Like, grab somebody. And like I said, like, whatever, like, if that's your jam, cool, awesome.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like,
why is this a big deal? But also, like, even for people for whom that is a part of their life, that ain't their whole life all the time. Like, that's not what's happening here.
Yeah.
And there's like a very, very high level of like enthusiastic consent involved. So like you said, this is not just like someone going to a party or whatever and like putting hands out wherever. Like, you would get yourself shown right out the door if that's how you're acting. So
it's just always been funny to me with how people react to something they don't fully grasp, you know. And I've always seen that no matter what. But, you know, one of the other things there was a lot of interesting findings here, but yes. Well, on a quick aside, a lot of people think that people who have multiple partners do not engage in safe sex practices because I think they think it's just like a wild time. Right.
Yeah.
And that's actually not true. They actually prioritize that.
Very much the opposite.
Yeah. So the statistic was unsafe sex is actually more prevalent among individuals cheating within a monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And not to like rag on any people in particular, but yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I have never met, I have never met, on the whole, a group of people that is so conscious about their sexual health than in the non-monogamous community. Like, there are people who will show up to a party, a date, whatever, and have their results on their phone that they've like downloaded from their medical provider portal, you know, talking about like barrier protection and birth control and all that stuff on a first date is like very normal. You know, there's no such thing as safe sex. It's all a risk always, but like safer sex is a big deal. And if you want to continue to live your life the way that you want to live it, you have to take care of that stuff. So yeah, that's always funny too. Like, so it's like, we're having orgies every weekend and riddled with disease is basically like what my life is apparently. So
yeah. Well, that makes sense to me too. Cause one of the other findings was that someone who thrives in this kind of relationship or these types of relationships, the one thing that people typically have when they're in a non-monogamous relationship is good communication or interpersonal skills with their partners. Mm-hmm. And safe sex, I would think, partly has to do with that.
Mm-hmm. You know, so. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I would say that and a lot of people will echo this as well, that I worked with, is like, I thought that I had good communication before we did this. The reality is, like, even if you're good at communicating in non-monogamy, you're going to talk about things that like are not things you would ever talk about at your dinner table, at whatever, things that you've been told, like either told or socialized to think like you shouldn't talk about this at all with anyone, or things that we typically deem as like uncomfortable conversations, like around sex. And so, yeah, I mean, to do this successfully, and successfully not meaning nothing ends, just to do it well and be happy in it, you have to talk about almost everything, which includes a lot of uncomfortable things. And so that's one of them. And so, yeah, I think it's just a different way of talking that you don't always have to when you don't have multiple partners. And I think that the safer sex thing is a big part of that for sure. Yeah.
And then just to hit on one more thing I found that was very interesting, because this is another, I think, stigma that people have. They feel like parenting and family dynamics are directly influenced by it in a negative kind of sense, where when they followed a lot of children of these types of relationships, they found them, it didn't inherently lead to an unstable home environment. Those strong relationship skills actually extended to parent-child relationships. And it was also, children may benefit from care and attention of multiple adults despite facing a social stigma. And yeah, that's another interesting one, because that's another thing, right?
Oh yeah, people will, and I mean, I'm always upfront and clear that I do not personally have children. And so I can only speak from like the role of an educator in that way, not personally, but yeah, people will comment all kinds of stuff online around like, you know, you're traumatizing your children, this is gonna cost you so much in therapy later on, da, 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 da. And I'm like, I'm a therapist, kids need therapy for all kinds of reasons, and this is probably not going to be the number one. I mean, I think the reality is like, we all learned what was like normal and abnormal from childhood on. So if kids are exposed to, and of course, exposed appropriately and age appropriately to these kind of like conversations, if that's something that parents even want to bring up, not all parents do share this, depending on like what it looks like for them.
Right.
But yeah, it's like, it's really not, it's not this like life altering in a bad way thing. And I also always find it interesting that, you know, how many times you'll see a video of like, you know, a couple that's married, has children, they get divorced, they remarry, and all four of those adults and the children that are maybe siblings, half siblings, step siblings, whatever, all get together for Christmas. And everyone's saying, like, what a beautiful family. How great that you can all get along and provide this for these kids and da 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 da. But if my family, my husband and I, my other partner and his other partner did that, we would be like the devil, right? Like,
yeah.
How horrible for our collective children that they have to sit through Christmas with these four adults because we're like, whatever, you know, poisoning their minds with. I think people don't know what they don't know, and they're scared of what they don't know. And then they just assume these things. And like, there are a lot of things that can really mess kids up. And for the most part, adults being honest about things like sex, love, caring about multiple people is not the thing that's going to mess them up.
That's very true from not experience in that arena per se, but there was a lot of issues growing up, and I had more problems with them not leveling with me.
Yeah.
I was a smart kid too, and I can figure things out, and it just always bothered me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was a lot of issues I had to deal with growing up, you know, trust wise or whatever, because of that. So, you know, I'm almost a firm believer that no matter what you do, you kind of screw your kids up.
I mean, everybody does something, you know. It's like
you can be perfect, and it's like my parents were just too perfect. I can't live up to that.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah. So I'm a firm believer that I'm actually just a firm believer that everybody should, you know, go seek some kind of counseling for themselves, because everybody can use it. Yep. Fortunately, it's not easy for everybody, and healthcare is a nightmare in this country. Uh-huh. So can't really do that, but that's just my two cents on that. So, but you know, so it's interesting too. And then I was thinking about the concept of marriage and what we've been taught, you know, as far as you find a soulmate and then everything's got to be perfect. You know, marriage is something that changed a lot also in like the last 100 years. I mean, people used to marry for status or anything but love back in the day, right? I mean, a lot of people actually, I mean, when I think about it, people used to probably have almost these types of relationships because most of their marriages were based on status.
Yeah, I mean, love, 100%.
Yeah, love is like a newer idea in the last 100 years or so that we really started. So it's like you said, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and we just grew up with it. So everybody always thinks that that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's just very different from, I mean, like the whole concept of like legal marriage and getting like the government involved in legalizing with a piece of paper marriage was a financial proposition and to make sure that we know who like legitimate heirs are. And so, you know, anyone who's ever watched a period piece of any kind, like movie, Bridgerton, whatever, like, you know, that nobody, like people, the concept of a love marriage was a very rare thing, to the point where people would be mocked for looking for that, right? Like, just get married. Like, what are you doing? Like, you just need a husband or a wife to do these things that a husband or wife does so you can, you know, be financially secure and have, you know, marry within your class, have status, all this stuff, right? So yeah, you're right. I mean, like, it is a historically a very new concept that one, you know, like holds out for the right person, you know, like emotionally the right person.
Right.
And so, but you're right. Like, because all of us presently alive, I mean, most of us that are presently alive, there's not a whole lot of over 100-year-olds, but there are, I've met plenty. But for most of us who are in that, you know, dating or marrying age range, that's all we know. So, you know, it's just this is the path you're supposed to follow. And when you get there, then that's what you do. And then everything's going to be fine. And so I think to your point, like, the idea for marriage or relationships to be additionally something different than that is really not all that jarring, considering this has only been a couple 100 years that we've been doing it the way we do it anyway.
Yeah. And it's also just different now too. When you think, I mean, just you know, people got married and they had like 7 or 8 kids and tended mm-hmm. to a farm or did whatever they did. I mean, it's just such a different, there was a different, I think, expectation on it, obviously. You know, honestly, I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure on romantic love now. And that was one thing I found too. And I was listening to some of these, I was listening to some podcasts and stuff, and they were talking about how one thing that happens with a non-monogamous relationship is, again, it's not always about sex. It's sometimes about not, one person can't do everything for you, can't be everything. It's a lot of pressure being, you know, something you got to be, you know, like a perfect parent or a perfect partner. You have to tend to everybody's needs. You have your own needs, you know, and people are different. So like they were talking about relationships where it wasn't even that sex, they had sex maybe, but it was like, oh, my wife or my husband doesn't go biking. I do. Now I have somebody I can go biking with, or, you know, and it kind of relieved some pressure from the other spouse to have to be, yeah, do everything together and try to, you know, live up to whatever the expectation was. So, I thought that, again, like an eye-opening take on it.
It's like, you know, and again, like this is not, and I sometimes think people, I don't know, think this of me or other similar people who are out there, like on social media, in my community, that we're like of the opinion that non-monogamy is better or superior or something. And like, that is not at all in any way what we're trying to say. It's just like, let people choose what kind of relationship works for them, right? So if you are a person who's in a long-term committed relationship or married or whatever that looks like, and you are genuinely happy, fine, consenting, and actively choosing to be monogamous, not just defaulting to it, do that. And if the whole, like, your partner can't be everything to you either doesn't feel true for you, or you feel like, yeah, of course no one can be everything, but I'm cool with what I have, then awesome, do that. Like, stay with what you've got. But it doesn't have to be that way. Of course, so funny example, like how you said biking, like my husband is like a beach fanatic, loves the beach. He would live at the beach if he could. I would cannot too. Stand it. I think sand is like the worst creation ever. It gets everywhere. It never goes away. You find it. I cannot. So my husband's other partner loves the beach. In fact, she studies the ocean. So she's like all about it. And I'm like, go, please go to the beach. And like, I and my other partner also hate sand. And we're like, we'll stay over here. We'll go get a drink. You guys go lay on the beach for 5 hours. That's fine. And like, of course, people will say to me like, well, but that's what you have friends for. Like, why can't he go to the beach with a friend? Yeah, sure, he could. But why does it matter? Like, if we want to be monogamous and he wants to find his beach friend, or he also loves running long distance, which I cannot understand either, wants to have a running buddy friend, fine, right, cool. But if he wants to have a running buddy or beach partner, and I'm all fully aware and fine with it, what does it matter? Like, yeah, it's what works for us. But yeah, of course, that's what friendships are for, as well as, you know, you have people, and we have that among our friend groups as well, right? Like, you don't, not all of your friends are exactly the same. You might have like the friend that's like the funny one that you're going to go to when you're upset and you need like cat videos or memes sent to you. Then you have the friend that's like the emotional support friend who's going to bring you ice cream and whatever. And so it can be like that with partners as well, if that's how you're so inclined.
Right. Plutonic love is polyamorous in society. We're okay, yes, with that, but
indeed,
romantic love is very limited in our eyes a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we place, like you said, there's a lot of pressure on romantic love. So we tend to place romantic love above platonic love too, right? So like,
right,
yeah, we're all friends, but as soon as we all date seriously or get married, that person's number one, right? And we all just accept that. Or sometimes we don't and it hurts, but like, and that's fine, again, if that works for people. But what that's also been taught to us, there's nothing to suggest that your one single romantic partner has to come before all friends, all family, whatever. But that's just Like, that's what we've been taught is like the right, normal, healthy way to be in a long-term relationship. But again, I do think, like you said, that puts a lot of pressure on romantic love to be like the best version of everything. And also then if someone's making you like their highest, highest, highest priority, you have to do the same and you have to be able to uphold that all the time. And again, if that works for people, then cool. But that's not what everybody wants.
Yeah. I'm always been down with that. Like, whatever anybody wants to do, as long as it doesn't hurt me, it doesn't bother me at all. And I don't know, people just don't, I don't know. I don't know what it is with people. I was always like that. Like, I just never understood it. Even like when it was like, people would hate when I was growing up, you know, gay people. And I'm like, why?
Yeah. Like, how does this affect you in any way?
Yeah. And even the thing, like, even if somebody like hit on you, it's like, you know, you could say no.
Right. Like, it's just not... like when straight people hit on you and you exactly. say no. Like, you know?
Yeah. You know, so then it was like, yeah, I never really understood the whole thing. But yeah. So I was telling you a little bit before we started about that other psychologist, which was Dr. Amy C. Moores. And she researches and teaches about LGBTQ plus issues, it says consensual non-monogamy, gender and inclusion in higher education. So that's what she focuses on. So she's an assistant professor of psychology and faculty affiliate in engineering at Chapman University. But it was funny, she was talking about it, and they were talking about, well, part of that was what we just talked about, right? What they were finding was something they called diversified need fulfillment. And that's exactly what you just went over, that not expecting your partner to be everything. And then one of the other things we actually just talked about too, is they found when they polled people who were in non-monogamous relationships, activity variety was 40% of it, activity variety, which is again, going to the beach, biking, doing stuff like that. But a big thing that came up was the personal growth and development. So like autonomy and introspection of oneself. Some of that had to do with just exploring other needs that may have never been explored, even exploring even same-sex tendencies you might have never explored before because you got married young or whatever it was and you didn't feel comfortable then. So, you know, that was another interesting area, that personal growth and development. And yeah, I just wondered what, you know, what you found in that area personally and professionally.
Yeah, for sure. I think that that's like a huge, huge area. I think the, you know, exploration of sexuality is a big one for some people. That is people's entrance into this community. It actually was for me. That's why I initially asked my husband to open up because I came into my like queer identity later in life. We'd been married. We got married young, yada, yada. Obviously I just said I have two cis male partners, so that's not where we ended up here. But I dated only women at first, and I, you know, would again, obviously. But so for some people, it's like that is their entrance into this community, is like wanting to explore those kind of connections that they haven't, like you said, because they got married young or they've been married for 30 years and this is not a thing that was okay at that point. So that's a big thing. Or people will like get into the community and then through a variety of experiences realize that they like have these additional attractions to people that they didn't know that they had. So that's definitely a big like growth piece. But I think, yeah, the autonomy piece is huge. I think that can be like around like bodily autonomy and this idea that like, just because I have a committed partner does not mean that that partner gets a say in what I do with my own body. And again, not to say that's a negative thing if that's what you want, but so there's like that bodily autonomy piece and kind of like embodying whoever it is that you have found yourself to be. And then I think we always say in this community that non-monogamy is a pressure cooker for growth, because growth both in like a, if you are in a monogamous relationship and open up, it's going to highlight, like we said, like cracks and things that you need to do better with, but then also the internal like individual piece. I mean, it can be literally anything from like gaining confidence in sex to, you know, like realizing how worthy you are and like how much you have to offer people, to, you know, this thing that I'm interested in that I've never really found other people in my life that are into. Suddenly there are all these people that like also are that way. It's not just me. I think also the work that has to be done around personal boundaries and like what you will and will not tolerate in any kind of relationship is a big piece you really have to think about. I help people create agreements between partners, but before you even get there, you have to think about what am I willing to tolerate or not tolerate in a relationship? Is that something that I've been holding to this point? Or have I just kind of like gone along with things because that's my partner and that's what we do, right? So yeah, this idea of like, when I say yes to doing this thing or engaging with people in this way, am I doing that because I want to, or am I doing that because I think I have to, or because other people do or tell me to? So yeah, I mean, like I've had people that I've worked with say things like, you know, in working with you, Jess, obviously it's made a big difference in like my non-monogamous relationship, but also in all the relationship in my life, whether that's like with my parents or friends or coworkers, like the way I'm able to communicate my needs and how I can communicate when I'm upset in a way that isn't just like going off on someone and those kind of things. And personally, for sure as well. I mean, this has been what, like 3-ish years now for me. And at first I would say like, I'm an entirely different person now than I was then, but I don't think that's true. I think that have found my actual self. And so I was like pretending a little bit before, which we all do. It's fine. So yeah, I mean, I think I have personally experienced like a lot of confidence, a lot of, you know, feeling like I can stick up for myself. Like I don't have to take certain types of comments or treatment, you know, this idea of at the end of the day, everyone is going to do what they want in their life and what makes them happy. So there's no reason that I can't do the same thing. So yeah, I think the personal growth piece is huge around like so many different things. And I do think I'm not surprised that that study cited that as like one of the biggest things, because I do think that that's one of the biggest benefits that people experience in my community.
Yeah. You know, and it was funny. One of the things I found actually going through this when they were talking about, and it, you know, it's off the subject, but I guess they were talking about marriages. So I kind of got into that too. And I did get into a little bit into infidelity in a monogamous marriage. And studies are very interesting on that too, because it's like a lot of, almost like most of them would say they weren't unhappy with their partner. It's just that things changed. And one of it was like they cheated because they wanted to feel alive. Like yeah. You get so into a routine, and you know, sexuality obviously changes as you get older and years go by and you have children and stuff, and it's different. So a lot of people, and I shouldn't even just throw it into sexuality, it's just the feeling of, you know, maybe even being wanted again or looked at differently. And sometimes it's just, you know, there is like, they call that emotional cheating, I guess, too, where there's not a sexual relationship, but there is a relationship. But I thought it was interesting. It's like they wanted to feel alive again. That's a hard thing to talk about with your partner, especially if you don't have practice of being open in that kind of sense. So I happened upon, but I thought it was like fascinating. And in relation to this about being open and talking and stuff.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
So. Yeah. I mean, obviously like I would not condone cheating any more than any other kind of like dishonesty or secrecy in relationship. And I often think about how much would infidelity change if non-monogamy was seen as just as valid of a choice as monogamy. That does not mean that it would be for everyone, certainly by no means. And not everyone should do this, just like not everyone is meant for monogamy either. And, you know, there's no way to know like if that would be the case. But I mean, I have met people even before doing this that would tell you like, I don't know if I can be monogamous or want to be monogamous, but I'm going to do it. Like I'm going to try because that's what I'm supposed to do. And I don't want to be alone. So right. I'm going to go try my best. And then sometimes, again, not to excuse it, it comes to a point of like, well, what am I going to do here? Am I going to say to my partner of X number of years, I don't feel alive anymore? Like, we're not, you're not going to say that, yeah. Right? Like, that's not going to come across well. And so, you know, I think there is a level to which, like, I just wonder, like, certainly I do believe that if this were seen as like more of a mainstream option, that like people were kind of given this tray of like, right now it's kind of like, at least I was basically taught, like, you can be single and alone or monogamous. That's it.
Right.
Those are your options. And so in the absence of not wanting to be single and alone, right, you pick the other one. And so I think if like we could present people with this tray of like all of these options more upfront in starting dating and relationships, like, would people who don't know that they want to or can be monogamous find each other? And could this go a little bit better? Sure. I mean, I think that that's a valid thought that it could be different. And, but I think just in general, like, it's an interesting concept because I think people assume that cheaters are just, I mean, to be honest, just being assholes, like,
right,
just for the heck of it. Sure. There are those people. There's those people in everything, right, that are just not being kind and don't care about being kind. But I think there's a lot of other reasons. And I've worked with a lot of couples who have experienced infidelity. And the reason for that infidelity is some measure around like sex, like in spontaneity or novelty or whatever, and yeah, or sexuality. And people ask me all the time, like, can you become non-monogamous successfully after infidelity? My opinion is the answer is yes, if you both really want to do that.
Right.
It's not going to fix, like, if one person really doesn't want to do that, but they're just going to do that to hold on to their partner. No, that's probably not going to work. But I've successfully led many couples through that kind of scenario where it truthfully was not the partner trying to be awful. And then they were able to be honest about that.
I was kind of interested. So when people come to you, mm-hmm, obviously they've had conversations because they're not going to just start with you.
Yeah.
Are they open at that point? Are they like, I guess people are different, but do you find like one partner is usually not as willing when the other, yeah, one might be?
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to, so I work with people who are either just entering or have just entered non-monogamy from any standpoint. So I do like have people who are not yet in a relationship, or they might be in multiple relationships, but they're not, it's not what we would assume a relationship is. Like, they're not cohabitating, they're not, et cetera. So I have worked with like individuals who, what would be what we might call like solo polyamorous, having multiple partners, not living with someone, et cetera. But a lot of my work is with couples, monogamous couples who are opening up or want to open up. And I think that's because anyone over a certain age, right? Like, this was not ever a thing. So that's where they are, right? Like, that's where they are in life is, you know, I have many couples who come to me and are like, we've been married for 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, right? And I mean, what I do, like, my coaching program is called Non-Monogamous Newbies. So I'm looking for those people who are like either brand new, have not actually opened up anything yet, but really want to, are sure that they want to, but don't know how to go about it, don't want to hurt each other, don't want to lose what they have, etc. Or people who have opened up and been practicing and then are like, oh shoot, like, we definitely skipped some steps here, and like, if we don't get some help, this is not going to go well. Do I think that, yeah, I mean, I think oftentimes I think it's rare. I think we will see this more in younger generations, but I think it's pretty rare for people to start a relationship and say from the beginning, hey, I want to be polyamorous, or I want to swing, or I want to have an open relationship. Like, I think it's happening more and more in younger generations, and it will. But most of the people that come to me are coming to me because one person brought this up. It's not like, yeah, they just magically like both woke up on a Saturday and were like, you know what, I've been thinking about this. And the other friend's like, yeah, me too. We should do that. Right. Yeah. That's not usually like what's happening. So yeah, I mean, like, there usually is one person that brought it up, and then for the other person, varying degrees of fear, really. I mean, for both people, fear, but like varying degrees of certainty if they want to do this.
Do you think that's around social stigma or just being also maybe insecure?
I think it's a lot of it is social stigma. Like a lot of people will cite geography, like the place I live, like I live in the Midwest and this will never be accepted. For example, a lot of people will cite family, right? My family is very Catholic. My family is very whatever, insert religious thing here, or just my family is very like conservative minded in general, not politically, not religiously, just like mind is a little bit closed. And I don't think that this is, you know, going to go well. So there's some of it that's that. And then I think so much of it, and this is really, I think, most of the work that I do with people, and this comes from both the person who brought it up and the person who received that information, is just plain fear and like body somatic responses that are very normal, that they just feel like, if I feel this way, if I feel fearful, if I feel jealous, if I feel like I don't, for a second, I have this blip of like, I don't know if I want to do this, that must mean I can't do this. And that's not true at all. So I think most of what, I mean, of course, I'm always like assessing for these things before I start working with someone. I never take on a couple where both people are not truly consenting. Yeah. There's a big difference between I don't want to do this because it's scary and I want to do this and I'm also scared. Right. Those are very different things. So that's usually where I try to go with people is like, tell me what your hesitancy is about. Like, do you actually not want to do this or are you just afraid, but you do want to do it? Because fear is like one of the most powerful natural human emotions. It's biologically primed for a reason. We want people to have fear and anxiety because if you're walking across the street and about to get hit by a car, you want them to react.
Yeah.
So people are going to naturally react to anything that feels like a threat in that way. And so that's a lot of what I do is like helping people either who have brought it up and are now like, I feel guilty and terrible because I've caused all of this. This is all my fault. Or the person who received that information, who's like, I am so afraid to lose them. What if I lose them? What if? And of course, we know logically that there's no necessary guarantee that you will lose someone by being non-monogamous and not lose them by being monogamous. That's just not true. But that's what people's bodies respond to. And when our fight or flight and our anxiety, you know, flare up, then you got to have somebody to like talk you down and be like, listen, it's okay. This does not mean you can't do this. We can work through this. So yeah, the fear is like the biggest part, and losing someone, ruining something or like other people's opinions or how it'll be viewed by other people.
Yeah, I could see that. And then I grew up like I went to Catholic school, so it was beat into me, you know, as far as all that kind of stuff. I'm not really practicing anymore, but there's still like would be this thing in my head because it's just, you know, it's conditioning throughout your life. So totally can see that just on a numerous amount of levels. Yeah. I was glad you brought up younger generations because that's what I was wondering. I was like, I wonder if younger generations are going to be more open to this. And then sometimes I think about it and I'm like, maybe they are, and we don't really call it that. Like a lot of people have friends with benefits, right? Yeah. Like, and let's face it, a lot of kids are getting married later because, you know, college is expensive, buying a home is expensive. So starting a family would be expensive. So, you know, like some people don't want to really, really have a boyfriend, girlfriend in college, not because they want to have fun, but
yeah,
it's expensive, man. I got to concentrate on what I got to do. So
yeah, I got to do this thing and like get through this stage of my life. And yeah, I mean, I think it's probably both. I think like there's, you know, I mean, in college, I mean, when I was in college, I guess this was kind of a thing, but probably not as much as it is now. This like idea of just actual dating, like where you go on dates with multiple people in the same time period, if you care to. And like this idea of like, if we haven't had the discussion that we're exclusive, that means that we're not exclusive and people can do what they want. Right. And then, you know, we only have to, you know, at a certain point, we only have to be sharing so much information because we haven't made this like verbal right. commitment to someone, right? I mean, that is non-monogamy. Like that is dating multiple people or having sex with multiple people or whatever. And so it's kind of like this, I just think it's such an interesting concept that we're like, if we actually dated in the way that like dating is meant, we would go from like, you can do whatever and people are mostly cool with this because that's what you do, to pull it all back. Like, it's just a very interesting concept. But I think, yeah, I think now it's not, I feel like if I, when I was in college, and also could have just been my social circle, but like, if I would have had like a friends with benefits, I think people would have been like slightly uncomfortable, like, okay, but like, but why? Like, why? Like, what do you, what do you get out of that? I mean, I know what you get out of that, but like, what do you get out of that? Right. And I think that that is changing as well. I think a lot of younger people, I mean, I've heard from a lot of younger people who's like have different kinds of conversations when they're starting out dating, because I think part of it is there comes a point here where like, there's no longer, it's no longer necessarily accurate to make the assumption that everyone is dating to get married, because lots of people in younger generations do not want to get married at all.
Right.
Or they're fine with getting married, but they don't want to cohabitate, or they're fine with cohabitating, but they don't want to get married, or they want a lifelong monogamous partnership, but they don't want to be legally tied to each other because student debt and a variety of other reasons, right? Like so many reasons. So I think that is also changing the dating relationship landscape, in that, you know, now in, I think in, I'm a millennial, in my generation, it is more acceptable. Like if you say, oh, I don't want to have kids, to someone in my generation, people are like, oh, cool. And people who don't want kids shouldn't have them, right? Like we're of this mentality. And so I think that just continues on down generationally, right? Like if someone tells you as a Zoomer or whatever, like, I don't want to get married, or I don't want kids, or I don't think I want to do those things, or I'm open to it, but I'm not sold on it or whatever, that there's less of this like stigmatized, well, you're going to be like not normal in society if you do those things.
Yeah. I'm the tail end of Gen Z. So I was like right in the cusp there. So, and that was a different generation too, but I don't know if we had that as much, you know, but all our parents were boomers, I guess. I don't know. And that just always makes me laugh, because I'm always like, the boomers are kind of like, they came out of the 60s. I thought that was all free love. And then they all
sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Like, which also it was like the 60s and 70s were, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
And then it was like, what happened? You stopped having fun and became self-righteous. Yeah. Well, like, come on.
Right. You're supposed to settle down. You're supposed to, you know, we had our fun when we were young, but now we have to do it right.
So
I'm of the opinion that you can continue to have fun. Well, you don't have to stop that. But, you know, again, to each their own. Whatever makes people happy, long as it's not hurting you or anyone else, then cool. You do you.
That's where I am. Well, I am gonna let you have the floor here and tell us where we can find you. I really enjoyed the conversation. It could probably go on for hours, but I can't at this point. Yep. But maybe we'll do something again in the future.
Yeah, sure. So where can one find me? So I am on Facebook and Instagram. My Instagram handle and the name of my Facebook group are the same. It's non-monogamous newbies. There's an underscore on Instagram, but you would find me. So that is like where I do a lot of like free education and offer like PDF download freebies, like these kind of things that are like around the most popular topics. I also do like live education events too in my Facebook group. If you search the word non-monogamy on Facebook, you will get a bajillion groups, which is just further proof that we are out there. But yeah, so that's social media. And then people could always go to my website, which is www.bothandcoaching.com, B-O-T-H-A-N-D. coaching.com. Obviously there's a little metaphor there with the both and. So yeah, I am, you know, I'm always happy to meet people, whether that's because they're interested in non-monogamy and they're like, I don't know all about this. What's the deal? Or, you know, I've had people come to me too and say like, so-and-so in my life came to me and told me they were non-monogamous and I don't know what to do with that. Like, can you please help me? So all level of people, my Facebook group is like I think we have like just over 600 people now, which is like so cool to me that like it just, again, it just shows like there really are so many people looking for like support around this. And like we said before, like practicing every kind of non-monogamy you can think of and really coming together and supporting each other too, as well as my support, just, you know, answering questions and giving their personal experience and stuff. So yeah, I'm always happy to talk with people for whatever reason. I do like presentations and all that kind of stuff too. So you can always reach out.
All right. Well, I will leave it all in the show notes. And again, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. And and yeah, maybe next time I won't have so much technical difficulty, but
it's all good.
I want to thank you for taking some time out of your day today and listening to the show. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to learn more about the topics discussed in this episode, check out our show notes at my website, jburkshow.podbean.com. And don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or wherever you enjoy your favorite podcast so you never miss out. You can also follow us at Jay Burke Show on Twitter and Instagram and JBurke17 on TikTok for the latest updates and going-ons behind the scenes. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review. It helps us improve and grow the show, and each and every one of you has such an impact on that, and I can't thank you enough. Join us next time, and remember,
it won't always be a straight line, but take the journey and escape a while for thoughtful excursions into the world of ideas across media, politics, technology, pop culture, and all realms of civic life.
You're listening to the Ruth J. Burke Show.